Welcome to Hot Plate, the conversations we should be having about our food and drink. I'm your host, Mirella Amato. Today on Hot Plate, drinks writer and former bartender Sarah Parniak joins us to talk about the low, no alcohol beer trend. Then, a hot tongue, a not-so-hot study, and on Curious Kitchen, I introduce Joshna to one of my favorite snacks. So we have the wonderful Sarah Parniak in the studio.
Hello, welcome.
Hello.
And Sarah is a drinks and travel writer, and also the Canadian ambassador for Seedlip. Joshna, you remember we sampled in episode 6, I believe?
Nice recall, yes. I
have
do
it
remember.
Written down in front of me, but I won't lie.
And what was the verdict?
The verdict is it was very compelling and interesting. But I remember thinking that I needed to have different expectations, right? Because I kept on sort of being like, I can't taste anything, not connecting to the fact that was sort of the point.
Did you?
Because we sampled it on its own first,
rather than in a cocktail.
And
right?
When you sample it on its own, it's really just flavored water. Like the mouthfeel is sort of.
If you're
not
a trained
there
taster,
and, yeah.
It is such a disconcerting experience. Mm. I agree. Like the first time I tried it neat, I was just trying to wrap my palate around it, especially coming from a spirits background. I just didn't understand. And then when you get it into a cocktail, which is how it's intended to be served and as the base for, you know, a sophisticated non-alcoholic drink,
sure.
Then all the flavors stratify. It really comes to life and you really start to understand it. But I think that moment is kind of crucial in understanding that Seedlip and non-alcoholic spirits are just kind of a breed of their very own. And we kind of have to develop a new understanding and application for
right.
them rather than impose a classic cocktail template onto
okay.
non-alc drinks.
I have a question, though. The thing that I didn't really understand when we were tasting this stuff is what is it that Seedlip is offering that something like another herbal tincture or bitters or something like that is not offering?
Sure, then that's
right?
a great question. I think when people, and actually, back up. I know when people go to bars because I worked in them for so very long. They're really seeking an experience. They're seeking that moment where they feel seen, they feel treated, they feel special. And a product like Seedlip invites a guest that might not be drinking for whatever reason into that full experience by providing, you know, this beautiful bottle that the bartender pulls off the back bar. It's placed right
like
beside.
It's an inclusion thing.
It is actually, you hit the crux of
okay.
it. The pillar of our brand is inclusivity.
Huh.
And just, you know, avoiding any stigma that might be attached to choosing not to drink alcohol or not drinking alcohol.
Aha.
And bringing the guest or the person fully into that experience of having a wonderful, you know, drink at a great bar. And the way that the bottle's designed, we want the bartender to treat it the same way that traditional alcoholic spirit would be treated, and that they pour it, they mix it in front of you, you get that full delivery.
Mm.
And I think that's really where what sets Seedlip apart, besides the, you know, our complex production process and all of the effort that goes into like making it a truly quality option.
Which comes through in the flavor.
Mm-hmm.
The complexity. We tasted the garden one.
Yeah.
And it was within a very narrow spectrum of notes, but within that narrow spectrum, so many notes.
So
yes.
many things going
and
on.
And I feel
I
like for us,
yeah.
it didn't really click until we put it in tonic water and then it really bloomed.
Yes. The tonic
yes.
really opened it up.
Absolutely.
That is true.
Yeah.
And I am compelled about the notion of a thing, because I don't think that liquor or distilled spirits behaves this way necessarily, where something that needs other things, right? It's at its best when with others.
Yes.
Right.
Right. Which is not the case for vodka and bourbon and, you know, those folks can hang out on their own. But I like this idea that it's there to enhance other things. It's there to
yes.
work together with other things. And
that's
very
part of
cool.
a whole.
Yeah.
It's almost like a culinary approach
when
you're mixing
what I'm
a non-alcoholic
totally.
Cocktail with Seedlip, because they're all blends. So you drink the garden, which is sweet peas, thyme, mint,
mm-hmm.
hops, and hay,
right.
all distilled and blended. And so depending on what you choose to mix with, the other ingredients that go into the cocktail,
right.
different elements of the blend will hop to the
you're
fore.
You're going to open up different...
Yeah,
oh,
and it's really
that.
Fun. It makes them endless. endlessly amusing to play with in cocktails because you can take them in so many different directions.
Okay, so here we go. We're getting right to the crux of why I brought you in here. Because I think maybe even 2 years ago, I was going to say 10 years ago, the whole notion of something like Seedlip would, I mean,
I agree.
Would be completely foreign. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I remember alcohol-free beer did exist, but it was at the grocery store.
it was a sad consolation prize for pregnant ladies.
Not a lot of care and attention into the flavor necessarily. And now I'm seeing in Europe huge strides with non-alcoholic beers, and I'm seeing IPAs being produced in North America. There's Partake, which is well known for making a range of different flavorful. They still don't taste fully like beer. And then Seedlip comes along, and I just keep reading articles about the no alcohol, low alcohol trend. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you talk to people. What are the most common reasons people choose not to drink or to have a Seedlip every now and again? I'm sure there's a couple of them that keep coming back.
Yeah, I think that there are so many different reasons why people don't drink. Allergy, a lot of people are allergic to alcohol is something that I'm discovering more and more. People for medical reasons can't drink, but they love that ritual of having a cocktail with their family or their friends. There are a lot of people on, I don't know, have you guys heard of this keto diet?
I've heard a whisper.
So, you know, people are looking to curb their sugar consumption and their alcohol consumption because of that. Health and wellness again. So people are just like, oh, I'm trying to be more mindful. And then we're seeing a shift, especially in the industry, of more and more, like, even high profile chefs and bar owners choosing not to drink alcohol any longer.
Yep.
So there's also that. And then, you know, the people also don't drink for a host of cultural and religious reasons as well.
Yep, that's true.
So I wouldn't say that there's like one that sticks out the most, but I think maybe the one that surprised me the most is that a lot of people have legitimate allergies to alcohol.
That is a new bit.
And even they've been stuck drinking Shirley Temples for all this time.
Oh my God, it sounds like purgatory.
Sad. Right. Yeah, I have an allergy to all that sweet
cranberry,
whatever else it is.
Roses,
right?
Grenadine.
Yeah. Let me have an accurate sense of what we're talking about here. How many people in this country do you reckon don't drink?
So recently I read an article in the Toronto Star stating that 20% of our population in Canada does not consume alcohol. So that's a fifth of our population. And I think it's important to acknowledge that there have been so many people for a really long time that don't drink for a multitude of reasons. They've just never been serviced with a proper option.
Oh, yeah. So, it was always gross. You know, do you want
sugary
cranberry soda, the infamous
something
cranberry
out of the gun
soda.
Or a glass of water. Basically.
Yeah. And I can't tell you as a bartender again how many, you know, ginger ales I poured into champagne flutes and, you know, soda waters I was asked to disguise as gin and tonics. And, you know, there's that shame aspect that goes with, hey, I'll have a mocktail. Don't tell my friends. And so that's really what these more elevated options are trying to eradicate. So no one should feel left out or, you know.
Okay, but then does that mean, is it safe to say that this is just about serving an underserved population or market? Or is there in fact a rise in the number of folks who are not drinking?
There is indeed a rise in
it
the number
feels
of folks
like that's
that
the
are
truth,
not drinking
right?
for many different reasons. So actually, there was a report published recently by International Wine and Spirits that stated that last year alcohol consumption dropped globally by 1.6%, which is, when you look at on a global scale,
sure,
significant.
It's a lot
even.
Of people, yeah.
And I think, well, first of all, younger generations are choosing not to drink or are drinking less. We have health and wellness firmly embedded in the zeitgeist at this point, this idea of self-care, this careful consumption, just as though we want to know where our food comes from and why we're ingesting it. We want to know why we're ingesting our beverages and what we're putting into our bodies, and just being a little bit more judicious about, you know, what that is, sugar content. You know, sugar has been demonized more and more and more.
Indeed.
So people are trying to avoid that. So that classic sugary mocktail just won't cut it anymore. And then you add to this premiumization that you see across beverage in a big way that's only set to continue rising. So people are interested in craft or like unique options.
Right.
They're interested in innovative products. They're interested in alternatives, but they're also willing to pay more for an experience versus then take that $20 that they might have thrown at three vodka sodas in the past. They'll take that and take it to their favorite bar, to their favorite bartender, and ask for a properly mixed old-fashioned or a really great non-alcoholic cocktail.
Right, because they don't just want a thing from the gun.
Exactly.
Right? We want more than a thing from the gun.
Yeah.
So this
is part of a bigger trend, which has then left a gaping hole in this one area. Because in other areas, of course, you can make an old-fashioned.
Yes.
Those tools are all there, but the no-alcohol crowd or the teetotalers, I guess they're called, they haven't really been serviced.
No. And actually, I think that while, of course, Seedlip is designed to be for absolutely anybody. Often it ends up being something that for drinkers who have taste, who might enjoy a craft beer or a natural wine or a perfectly mixed bespoke cocktail, but they may not be drinking alcohol in that moment in time, but they're still looking to go out and have that social experience with their friends. Mm-hmm. They want a non-alcoholic option that pairs well with food and the moment and doesn't make them feel left out. So when they're offered that choice, a lot of people, maybe it's a Monday night, they have a big meeting the next morning, they still have an event or, you know, a dinner planned. They can go out and have that full, again, experience, but they don't have to feel like they have to consume alcohol to have a good time.
Oh. One of the articles I read talked about the extreme and how a lot of people find it a lot easier to just not drink than to be selective. Mm-hmm. It's just easier to cut it out. You don't have to make, you know, arbitrary decisions on when is right to drink, when is not to drink, and it's seen as the healthier option. And that does worry me a bit. We were talking in an earlier episode about vegetarian options on menus,
right,
and how very often vegetarian is seen as the healthy option, and then whatever, you know, if you're not vegetarian, then you got to have the fries with whatever you're eating.
Yeah, with
eating,
your big fatty red meat, yeah.
Right.
And I was concerned to read about this polarization that it might also exist, because it's okay to just drink every once in a while.
For
but
sure.
This idea of the extremes did worry me. So I'm glad to hear that what you're seeing more so is people making strategic decisions on different days to
absolutely
just choose something. And that makes sense. You know, I've had two cocktails. Everyone's ready for a third, or some people came later. Mm-hmm. Let me have something delicious but non-alcoholic.
I think that, you know, the topic of moderation is a really important one to examine. And that's how Seedlip has become an important tool in my own life for, you know, moderating my own intake. Again, as a bartender for so many years, like the only way you socialize is getting together over drinks,
sure,
or going to events where
that sounds
all
familiar.
The best,
I
do not have to tell you. So we have access to all the best things to drink all the time. And so when I go out, I might start my evening with a nice glass of sparkling wine and one of my favorite things to drink. And then I'll move to a Seedlip cocktail, and then maybe I'll have another alcoholic drink, and then maybe another Seedlip, and then call it a night. So I still am out for hours, having a great time, feeling engaged, and sipping on something complex and interesting, but I don't have to grapple with the consequences the next morning.
You know, absolutely understand this idea of moderation and having options. I did come across a statistic, though, that really surprised me. And so this was in the UK specifically. They did a survey, and more than a quarter of kids between 16 and 24 don't drink.
Yes.
More than a quarter.
In the UK.
Yes.
Yes.
The land of drinkers.
That's super interesting to me, because that's an age that I associate with
pounding and
making some mistakes in that area.
Right.
And so for this concerted decision to be happening, I feel like this is, you know, more than some people wanting to be healthy or moderating. This is really a larger
movement. What is happening,
movement.
Sarah?
Well, I'm also very fascinated in this, from obviously given my work, but also as someone that spends a lot of their time just examining, you know, the reasons why we drink on like a sociological scale. I think a lot of it has to do with social media, to be honest with you. Younger generations are going out and physically socializing a lot less and spending a lot more time socializing with their network over screens. So there's that. And then we also see that this idea of like instant documentation. So if you're out drunk being an idiot, maybe doing things that you know you're going to regret, that can be recorded and disseminated around.
I had not thought of that.
So this idea we're there culturally. We're there.
Yeah, people are really, really 16-year-olds to control and curate their image.
It's true. I am super grateful that no footage exists of me at 16.
Woo. Yeah, I'm sure we're all in the same boat.
Super grateful. Mm-hmm. Is it comparable to a bottle of booze, a bottle of Seedlip? Assuming, because I feel like people will listen, and the automatic expectation will be that it is lots cheaper, right?
Yes.
When the work that goes into producing that beautiful collection of complex flavors is really what you're going to pay for.
Absolutely.
But tell me if I'm on the right track with this thinking.
Yes, you are on the right track. It is a premium product, so it's priced similarly to, you know, a premium spirit.
Okay.
We call Seedlip a distilled non-alcoholic spirit because it is. We essentially go through the entire process of, well, we macerate the plant material. We do use a neutral grain spirit in that process to basically act as a solvent on the plants. And then we take those and individually distill them in a copper pot still, removing the alcohol and then concentrating all of those wonderful plant essences.
Wait,
so that process takes 6 weeks.
What happens to the alcohol?
We put it back into the maceration process.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Closing the loop as much as
possible.
No
booze left behind.
Continue.
Exactly. And for context, I usually tell people, oh yeah, well, like you can, even the most premium vodka or the most premium gin, you can distill in 24 hours or less. So
important.
It is an important thing to note. And also, if, you know, Seedlip is genuinely trying to change the way people think about non-alcoholic options.
Right.
And I don't think you could ever do that successfully by putting out a bottom shelf product.
Right.
So we want people to feel, you know, empowered and excited to order a Seedlip because they see it on a back bar or on a list versus whisper to the bartender, please make me a mocktail.
Yes.
Don't tell my friends.
Well, Joshna, have you heard of an e-tongue before?
No, tell me more.
You've never worked with one?
No, I've never worked with one. I've heard whispers of and have been very curious, but I have never.
I hadn't heard of them at all. And, you know, what I picture in my mind is super fun. I think I almost don't want to see one because I think it will disappoint.
The dream? Sure.
It's probably just like looks like a litmus paper or something.
Right, that you drop something, yeah.
But I came across an article in the Journal of Food Science, and e-tongues are now being used to test spicy foods.
Right.
Apparently, these are the things we don't think of.
Right.
But
who
there are people
who are
tasked.
Who the poor human subjects might have been. Oh.
That their job is to test these spicy foods. Side note, I have to ask you. This article was pertaining specifically to spicy cheese, spicy paneer, which I have never heard of.
Spicy paneer?
Is this something you're familiar with?
I mean, it's not any more of a thing than spicy chicken or anything else. Like, it's just a way to cook the paneer.
Interesting, because they were talking about the cheese specifically. They made it sound like the cheese was spicy.
No,
we're going to have to research
thing.
That further.
Yeah, we'll need to research it.
Unless it's the sauce around the paneer.
Yeah, and the way it's cooked. Unless somebody is making paneer and putting like green chilies or masala inside, which really I would be very excited about.
Interesting.
Okay, if that is in fact the case, bring it in. Let's talk about it. But from what I understand, paneer remains the blank canvas that you know it to be.
Great. Okay. Just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing
out
there, because
no.
It does sound exciting, right?
I would
be
sad to miss out on masala or chili paneer. Come on.
So these poor people are tasked with tasting all of this, these different iterations of this spicy food. And apparently, between each bite, they have to take 5 minutes for their tongues
to
recover.
To relax and recalibrate.
There's something about spicy food that when you eat it, it sends a wave of panic through your body.
Yes.
Of like, ah,
you might
fire.
Die. We're in trouble. Yeah.
And so for a minute, your brain can't quite register the flavor. So there's also this delay. It was a fascinating article.
Oh, I love that.
And so the e-tongue can very precisely detect.
Oh, bounce back.
Yep. It can predict, it can tell exactly how much spice is in there. And if you have, you know, 20 samples, the e-tongue can narrow it down to 3. And then the tasters only have to deal with 3. instead of 20 samples.
Oh, this is the machine is really helping the human out here.
It is. It is. I'm fascinated by Yitungs in general. I was reading up on them, and they're normally used for a variety of applications.
I have lots of curiosity.
One of them being detecting if honey's been adulterated in any way, detecting if grapes are ripe, creating salt blends.
So no more stealing a grape in the grocery store. Yitung's going to do that for us. I love it.
Oh, amazing. Also used to create salt blends. So apparently they're trying to find ways to make food taste salty, but without too much sodium chloride. Mm-hmm. So playing with different salts. And then drug formulation, seafood
it's
quality.
It's true because the saltiness can really muddy up on your tongue. Right?
Yeah.
In a way that you're like, I can't find a clear way through this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's only like, I got to sleep on it or the next day to let my tongue relax.
Really?
Right? Like there are times even when sometimes when I go and eat sushi, right? When I've consumed
yes.
a higher, the soy sauce will burn, like tingle a little bit. And it will sort of get in the way of everything else I eat for the rest of the day.
It's interesting you
right?
mentioned that. I've had that experience too with
yeah.
sushi
mm-hmm.
specifically.
Because you're dragging it in that soy so much, right? So maybe that feels really helpful and useful. I know exactly what that fried circuit vibe is on the tongue.
Wow. And my mind immediately went to beer because we have IPAs, which are incredibly bitter. And I've had the misfortune of being on a judging panel where they're tasting IPAs. And, you know, I have to judge 10, 15 Ooh. IPAs back to back. And to keep your tongue fresh between each one, because you want to do the brewer justice, obviously, I developed this not particularly appetizing technique of rubbing bread on my tongue.
Oh, did that work?
It does, to a certain extent.
Okay.
Yep. It looks horrible.
Fair
I get
enough.
Stares from everywhere, although I'll often at a table get a few people mimicking me because it does work. And they're like, oh, I'll try
they're
that.
They're like, what's she doing?
Okay. I don't know. So I end up, with a lap full of soggy bread by the end of the
because you don't consume the bread. You're just wiping with the bread.
It's a lot of bread, or else I'd be having bread and beer
Surely,
all day. It's too much. But, you know, that would be an interesting application. I can think of so many applications.
I am also so interested in the objectivity of an Yitung.
Okay, tell
right?
me more.
Because, okay, so we're going to taste something. And because I'm a cook and I understand that there's this wisdom about the places on the tongue and the different tastes and, you know, flavors and stuff. So I will attempt to offer you as balanced feedback, right? And I've judged cooking competitions, so I understand you got to sort of stay down the way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to just being like, I didn't like that. I did, you know, that was the most delicious
right.
thing. That's not helpful, right? Let's be more
Break
constructive.
It down.
But I wonder if we did a lineup of human tastes of the same thing versus e-tastes, you got to think that the e-taste is going to be at least attempted at a more objective synopsis.
I'm actually dying to
yeah.
to play with one to find out what right. it is.
Where do we get an e-taste?
It sounds like they're calibrated for very specific purposes, and it sounds like maybe one taste at a time, because we talked about the application with spicy.
So it's not like
salty.
E-tongue is not going to take a mouthful of food. Or a dish or something.
I think it will, but it might only report on one
I see.
Aspect.
You okay.
might need from what I can see. Because
okay.
if they're testing grape ripeness, right, they're testing sugar.
It's very drilled
Clearly.
Down. That's very specific.
There was
specific.
The salt one.
Okay.
That's what the feeling I get, but maybe they will evolve.
Oh,
maybe,
I love there's a lot.
Maybe
there's
one day I'll be replaced
here,
by
right?
a bunch of Yitungs
yeah,
judging
better.
Beer competitions. So I sent you that article, Joshna,
yeah.
about the study. Super depressing.
Super depressing. Super not the vision of the world I was very excited to read about.
No. It was a small sample, so
yep.
they only tested 400 people. And there's a study that was conducted in the U.S. Three different universities got together. And the goal was to see if women are at all objectified or dehumanized when they drink. And so the way they conducted
right, sort of
the study.
A giant question to ask too, right?
It is. It is.
Yeah.
So they had both men and women participating in the studies. And then they showed them photos that looked like Instagram shots of women at a bar drinking a glass of water or a woman at a bar with a beer in hand. And then the same thing, a man with a glass of water and a man with a beer in hand. And the perception of the two men, whether drinking water or beer, was the same. And the perception of the woman with the beer was definitely like, oh, she looks like she's tipsy. Oh, she looks like she's, you know, probably single, probably a little bit more open to a one-night stand. They asked, you know, questions to understand how these women were being perceived. And here's what I felt was the most depressing piece of the study. Both men and women had that same perception.
Oh.
So even women looking at the photo were making that same call. And so when it comes to the when you're talking about looking less human, the sorts of things they were looking for was, did they seem more mechanical, cold, unsophisticated, superficial, shallow, less intelligent, less rational, a bit more like loosey-goosey? Those are the kinds of questions they were asking.
Yeah.
And across the board.
Oh, God.
The women were seen as less human and more sexually available.
Well, this the first thing that I connected to when I read a bit about this and even now in this conversation is the parallels around slut shaming.
Right.
Right? It feels like the very same vibe in as much as there are different rules for men and women, you know, engaging in a very basic activity like sex or drinking, I suppose. But that there's such different understandings of how genders engage with that activity is a huge deal.
For sure. I mean, The men weren't, even the women looking at the men or, you know, any person who might have been interested in that man looking at the man mm-hmm. did not see a difference between
not
the one drinking water and the one drinking beer.
Right. Because the purity, well, like the notion that a woman need remain pure and perceivably wholesome.
I don't
at all times. Like it just feels really archaic.
That's
right.
It's 2019.
I just don't understand.
What is this?
Did they have problems with the necklines and the shortness of skirts? You know, it's just the fact that we move so quickly from a conversation about how do you understand this person having one drink. Mm-hmm. In their hand. As I mean, be one thing if they were lined up with 15 shots in front of them. But if it's an Instagram photo with somebody with a pint glass in their hand, how does that conversation move to sexuality? Or what they might or might not be up for? Right?
But it did. It's,
that is a very,
board.
Very disconcerting. That's a bit heartbreaking to think, to realize that collectively we are still here with this conversation.
It's ingrained.
Come on, everybody.
On some level.
We got bigger fish to fry. It is, though. The internalization about this spread in gender sort of privilege and understanding, I agree with you.
And here, this was a, in case we're not depressed enough.
Yeah, give it to me.
A quote that really, I think, got to the core of why they did this study and where the real issue lies. Because, looking at a woman and thinking, oh, she's probably up for a good time. It's not necessarily harmful.
Mm-hmm.
But here we go. The researchers found that people may be less likely to help a woman in a risky situation if she's been drinking because they might think she's interested in risky or casual sexual behaviors and therefore not think the situation is a threat to her.
Oh, my God. Right? This is just like the fact that women are told to yell fire when they're being assaulted on the street.
I haven't heard that.
Right? Because the baseline understanding is that if they yell out for help honestly, that people will not take them seriously.
Really?
Right? So like college age women, you know, living sort of on their own in a city for the first time, the mouthful that you get is if you are in fact attacked or something terrible like that happens, you yell fire because that is a much more reliable source of assistance than to scream about whatever your situation is.
It's
right?
just so horrible because the women they're describing in this quote and the women you're talking about screaming for help, you know, these are vulnerable people
totally.
Who do need assistance. And you know, you were
and
talking about
like,
slut shaming earlier.
Yeah.
It's the notion that we from just looking at a woman with a beer in her hand.
An Instagram photo. Like, it's such a distance thing.
Oh, well, if she gets into some risky business, it's probably what she's into. Because she's
so crazy, right? It's like a drink equivalent of a short skirt.
Right.
Right? Be like, oh, she was drinking. Which is just, like, it's just, it's too much.
Speaking of drink equivalent of a short skirt, the other thing that I was really curious about, and I'm really sad they didn't do further research, although, you know, they didn't do the research for me, is why beer? And I wonder if that woman was holding a glass of wine.
Is it somehow classier or bubbles?
Or if it would have been perceived differently. Right? Or, you know, if the man was holding a glass of wine. Or, you know, I guess I'm wondering if it's beer specific. Because as we've discussed in the past, beer has more of a, like,
jovial,
you know, up to mischief vibe to it, again, unfortunately.
Yeah,
again, it's true. You know, a part of the fabric of how we see and think about things that is distorted and wrong.
But let the record show.
I was curious to find out how much the fact that it was a beer played into that. And it doesn't make me feel great.
No, it doesn't at all. Why, particularly because there's this other conversation asking questions about why aren't there more women who are in beer? Why aren't there more women who brew beer? Like, perhaps there's some, we've made a correlation here, but perhaps we have a bit of an answer to that question, right?
Yeah, could definitely be a piece of it.
If the world still has this ridiculously archaic notion of what it means if a woman is excited about a pint of beer, that might explain why, you know, the deterrent that is the brew house. If this is the price that women are paying, right?
Yeah. Although I have to be honest, I mean, I drink beer for a living and also for fun in public. And I've never felt that.
I was going to ask, like, has that ever been a thing?
No. Have you ever had that feeling?
No.
That's something that you do detect, even if it's just on a subliminal level. You know, like, you don't exactly know, but you know that when you drink beer, you don't feel as good, and you don't know it's because everyone around you is dehumanizing you.
Right. Or if you're just,
you just
had too much beer. Right.
So, you know.
Ugh. I mean, look, important to shine a light on the fact that this ridiculous nonsense is still a real thing, but wow, that's a blow. That's hard on the heart.
Time for Curious Kitchen.
Woo!
So I was a bit inspired by you for this Curious Kitchen, Joshnook, because in the past when you've brought in things, sometimes they've been from your cultural background.
Yes, yes.
So I wanted to share a little something from my cultural background.
Wonderful.
And it's my favorite snack, one of my favorite snacks, and something that depending on who you hang out with, you might have already had.
Okay.
But it's an interesting one because it's something I grew up with. And which is very common in a number of cultures. But in my late teens and early 20s, I had a number of incidents where I tried to share it with friends. And they were at best curious and politely tried it. But most of the time just found it so off-putting as a concept that they would not even try it. And so I've given up on sharing it, but I'm going to share it with you.
Thanks.
But maybe you've already had it. Anyway, here goes. You ready?
Yes. Oh, wait. Okay. So you have put a can of lupini beans on the counter.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever had canned lupini beans. What?
I eat them all the time.
Really?
So this is very big in Italian cultures. I know in Portuguese and in various areas. And for some reason, the fact that you can just open a can and eat the beans out of the can bothers people.
Really?
But it's a delicious snack.
People are weird.
So you haven't had them before?
No.
Exciting.
I haven't. I see the can.
Yeah.
And I know that this is a thing, but I couldn't tell you what they taste like.
Okay. So if you want to grab one, I'll show you the proper way to eat one.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So you'll see that it's the yellow bean and then there's a skin around it.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is find the little hole on the skin and then use your teeth to break that hole
like
open a little bit more.
It's a little like a fava
game.
And then
you just pop it out.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Oh, flew across the room. I've been doing this since I was a small child.
Let's try one more.
Yeah,
oh my God,
some practice.
I'm into the saltiness happening right now.
So you have to get an
flying across
what's
the room.
What's the secret? I have to go collect the beans off of the floor later on. What is the secret? What is the secret?
Like I said, I've been doing this since I was little. I think you want to make sure you have a full length slit, and then you can just
Off. Oh.
You got it?
Yeah, because I think I'm pushing it through too small a hole.
Okay.
And then that's what the explosion is all about.
Although that's fun.
Oh, there it is.
Like a pro.
Who are the weirdos that are not? This is salty and delicious.
It's salty and delicious, but it's also beans straight out of a can, which is what... So that's the proper way.
I'm into this.
And so, it's not unusual in my family when the men are all playing cards. And sometimes the women's. To end up with a nice pile of lupini skins on the side. Yep. So that's the proper way, the Mirella way. Mm-hmm. I just eat them whole.
Oh, girl.
Yeah. Completely different texture.
Extra?
A little bit saltier. But I much prefer it with the skin on. So I thought I'd let you experience that as well. So this is something we'll often eat, with aperitivo as we're waiting for the meal to be ready. I love it with just a pilsner, anything bitter.
I was going to say, for sure, I want a cold beer here.
Mm-hmm.
These are delicious.
They're Moorish, aren't they? You just want to keep eating them.
100%. Plus, I like that you have to do a little bit of work.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm into that, like peanuts. Yeah.
I guess I'm too lazy.
Oh my God. Look, no more shooting across the studio now. I figured this out. These are delicious.
I have no idea.
I'm thinking about fava beans is the other context that I know this, right?
In my world, this is just a snack.
It's just about this.
Yeah. Are fava beans this salty?
No.
Okay.
But the freshies, right? You've got to pull that skin off because it doesn't cook.
I don't know. I'm prepping for this segment. I started reading about lupini for the first time. To me, they're just a snack that we have around the house.
Mm.
They're fascinating. And I wouldn't know where to start cooking with them, but perhaps that's something that you can solve.
Well, that might be my new experiment. Oh, I love these. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you're enjoying The Hot Plate, rate us or leave a review. We'd love to hear from you. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Hot Plate Pod. Follow me at Beerology on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And follow Joshna at Joshna Maharaj on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you to Joshna for joining us today. Hot Plate is recorded at Eggplant Picture and Sound Studios. Our audio engineer is Brad Tigwell. Original music by Dave Bell. Hot Plate is produced by Mirella Amato, that's me, and Dennis Coyne. That's a wrap.